The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, I am back from my vacation in Denver. It was awesome. Not only did I smoke a lot of weed, of course, but the Taylor Swift concert was awesome, as I expected it to be. I am a Swiftie, so of course I was going to have fun, but holy shit. She played two nights in Denver, sold out shows to 73,000 people. I went to night one on Friday night. A week from today, it was so much fun. I mean, I've never seen so many people. Everybody was out of their seat, singing, dancing, having a good time. I've never experienced in my life. I've been to many shows in my life, and I have never, ever in my entire life experienced the entire crowd singing along to every single song. It was crazy. She put on an excellent show. Great set list, 3.5 hours. I did not sit once. I was singing and dancing my ass off. I was sore the next freaking day. And my brother and I were even upset that we didn't get to go to Saturday night's show. But that's how difficult tickets were to get, is that we couldn't even get tickets tonight too. We could hear it from where we were staying in our backyard at the Airbnb. We were staying kind of downtown, about 10 minutes from the Denver Broncos Stadium, and we could hear it. And the crowd was just so loud. It was fucking amazing. So if you have tickets to this show, just know you are getting an excellent show. If you're kind of on the fence about whether you want to go to maybe one of the Europe shows or whatever, just word of advice, go. If you're a Swiftie, you are absolutely going to have a great time. Even if you're not a Swiftie, I feel like you're going to have a good time. I mean, the few straight dudes that were in the building, the dads who were with their daughters, or the guys who were with their girlfriends or wives, they were having just as much as fun as the rest of us were. And Taylor Swift, thank you for putting on a great show. I will also say, what I really, really loved about this show is it felt like it was the only positive place to be on the face of this planet right now. You know, there's so much negativity. There's so many people just arguing about dumb shit. And it was great to have just a night where all of us were singing, dancing, and just having a straight up good time. Nobody was arguing. Nobody was talking politics. It was just us having a fucking fantastic time and enjoying the great music of Taylor Swift. So I had a great time. And I know you're sports fans, so you may not give two shits and a fuck, but I don't give a crap. It was an excellent time. And if you are a big fan of Taylor Swift, go. Do yourself a favor and fucking go to this show, because it was worth every second of my time last week. Now let's get to the sports. We did have a few things happen in the NFL this week. As a matter of fact, training camps kicked off this week. Not all of them, a few kicked off this week, but as the days roll on, more and more will begin. So the best time of year, football season is about to hit. And so let's talk about what happened this week. So wide receiver DeAndre Hopkins, obviously the biggest guy out on the free agent market left. He ended up signing with the Tennessee Titans this week. I think that's a good move for both him and the team. You know, DeAndre Hopkins isn't exactly what he used to be, but I still think he's going to give you some juice. I still think he's a top wide receiver in the league. And that's what the Titans have been missing ever since they traded away Brown to the Philadelphia Eagles last year. They definitely were missing something at the wide receiver position. So definitely DeAndre Hopkins is going to give them a boost. And I think this is a good move for both the Titans and for DeAndre Hopkins. Then I also saw an interesting article. Don't know how much I believe it, but it wouldn't be that shocking. But apparently Bill Belichick is on the hot seat this season. Now, granted, the New England Patriots have not been a good team since they decided to let Tom Brady go to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But Bill Belichick, he's actually a few wins away. He should break the record this season for the most wins by any coach ever. So, I mean, he is one of the greatest coaches of all time. But if you don't produce, your job is on the line. So if the Patriots don't produce this year, if they're actually not a playoff team this year, will we see Bill Belichick out looking for a job next year? Will he retire? Who the hell knows? But that was very interesting, in my opinion, just to see that. Because these days, the NFL, you doesn't matter how legendary you are. If you don't produce the wins, you don't produce the Super Bowls, you don't make the playoffs, it's a sayonara sucker to you. So we'll see what happens with Bill Belichick. If the New England Patriots are not a good team this year, is he going to get fired? We shall see. In more interesting news, the New York Giants and Saquon Barkley were not able to come to an agreement on a contract extension for this year. They did place the franchise tag on him, but just because they did that doesn't mean he's going to play. And he even said there's a good possibility that he may sit out some games this season. He even said he might pull a Le'Veon Bell, which is just something I've mentioned numerous times on the show. That was one of the biggest mistakes, in my opinion, was Le'Veon Bell sat for the entire season when he was with the Pittsburgh Steelers many years ago. And it was even funny, too, because an article came out this week with an interview with Le'Veon Bell, who said the biggest regret he has made in his life is holding out for the Pittsburgh Steelers that year. So I don't know if it would turn out to be that big of a regret for Saquon Barkley, but it probably will. But also, I think the Giants were dumb for giving Daniel Jones the big contract and franchising Saquon. I felt like they should have done the exact opposite, because if the Giants don't have Saquon Barkley, good luck with Daniel Jones. He's not that good of a quarterback. The only reason why he looked pretty decent is because Saquon Barkley had a damn good season last year. So I don't think it will work out for either party in this instance if Saquon does end up sitting. I think the Giants will suffer, but I also think Saquon will suffer as well. But he also won't be getting injured. He will be sitting out and saving his body, and who knows, maybe they'll trade him. But the time has actually passed for a new contract, so we'll see what happens with the saga of Saquon Barkley and the New York Giants. But that should be getting here interesting here since training camp's going to be starting. Is he going to hold out through training camp? Is he going to hold out through the regular season? I know they will be playing the Dallas Cowboys week one, so I'll be pretty excited about that if there's no Saquon Barkley in that game. Then it's also official. As of yesterday, the Washington Redskins football team Commanders have finally been sold. They were sold for $6 billion. The sale was approved officially by all the NFL owners yesterday. As I predicted last year, about this time last year, I predicted Daniel Snyder would be selling the team. He did sell the team. It's a good thing that this guy is out of the NFL, just because, I mean, not only was his team known for a bunch of sexual harassment and racism and just a horribly owned team in the front office and side of things. But the Washington Redskins used to be one of the most storied franchises in football. I mean, they used to, every year, they were a powerhouse team. They would go to the playoffs. They've won multiple Super Bowls. They have multiple Hall of Famers. This is a team that is very historic. And ever since Daniel Snyder took over, they have been a historically bad team. They haven't been able to get a new stadium. They just have had the issues with the team name and all of that. And then, of course, all of the sexual harassment, the many lawsuits, and just Daniel Snyder has been a joke of an owner. So it is nice to get him out of here, even though he's getting a huge return on investment. I believe he only paid something like $500 million for the team, and he sold the team for $6 billion. Granted, yes, he's not going to get all $6 billion, but he definitely walks away with a huge return on investment in this. So, well, yes, haha, he does not have a football team. It's just another scumbag getting even more rich. So it's not like he's going to be drowning in his sorrow. He's got plenty of $100 bills to wipe his tears away. So He's not going to be suffering anything, but we'll see what the Washington Commanders have in store. Their new owner, unfortunately, said yesterday there's a possibility that we could go through yet another new team name with this stupid, idiotic team. It's like, come on, y'all. It's the Commanders. Let's not go through this again. He said he may change it just because they want to get rid of the stain of Daniel Snyder. The way I see it is, we've already had to go through this just recently, too. This isn't something that we went through like 20 years ago. This has been going on for the last like fucking 5 years, the team name change. I feel like we should just settle on the Commanders. It's a terrible name. Daniel Snyder was a terrible owner, but come on. We don't need a fourth fucking team name for me to add to this already joke of a team, Washington Redskins football team Commanders. I don't need to add that in there. Let's just stick with the Commanders. Because, come on, we don't need to go through that again. All right, and, you know, since we're closing in on the regular season, I did want to talk a little bit of football topics. So this week, I'm going to do the most improved teams. Basically, I'm going to pick a team that I feel like has improved the most out of each division in the league. So let's begin with the AFC East. I feel like the most improved team in that division is obviously the New York Jets. They traded for Aaron Rodgers, a Hall of Fame quarterback who's got an amazing resume. He's absolutely going to turn this team around into a contender. Who knows if they actually have Super Bowl aspirations this year. I mean, they are in a difficult division. They are also in the AFC. But at the same time, Aaron Rodgers really hasn't lost a step. And he's definitely improved this team for the better. So whether or not they're a Super Bowl contender remains to be seen, but they definitely are the most improved team in their division. By the way, when I'm talking about these teams, that doesn't necessarily mean I think they're going to be a Super Bowl contender or that they're even going to be a good team. It just means that they are most improved in the offseason. So let's move on to the AFC North. Shut up! Sorry, my dogs decided to be annoying at that time, at this point in time. But now she has shut up and taken her place on my bed for her nap, as she should. But anyways, on to the AFC North. I feel like the most improved team in the AFC North is the Cincinnati Bengals, just because they finally improved in the spot that they've needed to improve on over the past two seasons, and that is the offensive line. They signed one of the top offensive linemen in the offseason, Orlando Brown Jr. He's an offensive tackle, and I feel like he's definitely going to keep Joe Burrow from running around and being on his ass as much as he normally has been the last couple of seasons. And so definitely the Bengals have improved in the necessary spot that they need to. And then in the AFC South, I feel like the most improved team is the Tennessee Titans. I mean, really, I could have picked any team because all of these teams are pretty much terrible. But the fact that that the Titans improved on the offensive side of the ball with DeAndre Hopkins, I feel like it's a huge deal just because defensively, they're tough, they're stout, they're strong. They've got a very tough team defensively. But offensively, they're too reliant on Derrick Henry. And they definitely needed a weapon out there for Tannehill. So with the signing of DeAndre Hopkins, definitely think it puts them back in the driver's seat to take over this division. And then in the AFC West, I feel like the most improved team is definitely the Denver Broncos. They have a whole new head coach with Sean Payton. And that's just definitely going to turn things around. You know, they traded for Russell Wilson last year. The season was a pretty awful season for them, but I mean, they really couldn't get it together at all. I think Sean Payton gives them an identity, and they may not be a Super Bowl bound team this year, and they're definitely in one of the toughest divisions. I mean, you've got obviously the Super Bowl champions, the Kansas City Chiefs there. Then, of course, you have the Los Angeles Chargers, who have just been a surging team, and then you've got the Raiders as well, who aren't a powerhouse team, but you never know what they're going to do. And then, of course, you got the Broncos. So I feel like the Broncos definitely made a big, big splash by signing Sean Payton in the offseason as the coach, and he should definitely turn this team around in a positive direction. And then turning over to the NFC side of things, the NFC East, Unfortunately, in my opinion, I think the most improved team in the NFC East is the Philadelphia Eagles. Ugh. I mean, they had such a good draft, and they just only added more and more pieces that they needed to on the offensive side of the ball. And they even got better with the ground attack, which says a lot because they had the top ground attack last year. And they ended up trading for the running back from the Detroit Lions, DeAndre Swift, who he's definitely had his share of injuries, but he's not going to be the primary back. And so I kind of feel like he's going to be a big weapon for the Eagles this season. Then the NFC North, I feel like the most improved team is the Detroit Lions. They made some small moves this offseason, but I think the best move they made was signing cornerback C.J. Gardner-Johnson, who actually led the league last year in interceptions. So he's a ball hawk. He's definitely going to bring some oomph to this defense, which is what they definitely need. And I feel like the NFC North is completely up for grabs, really for any team, just because now that Aaron Rodgers has been traded away from the Packers, it really just puts everything up for grabs in this. And the Lions are definitely a team that could potentially win the NFC North. Then the NFC South, I feel like the most improved team is the New Orleans Saints because they picked up Derek Carr in the offseason. Their biggest glaring hole, of course, has been the quarterback position because Drew Brees retired a couple of seasons ago. Last year, it was just awful for them. They battled through the injuries. So now they have a much more reliable quarterback, a quarterback who really I don't feel like has gotten a chance. You know, he played for the Raiders, so you can you only get what you get with the Raiders, and it really wasn't a good time for him. He had multiple offensive coordinators throughout his time, and they were never a consistent team. So it should be nice for him to have a solid foundation. They've got Kamara in the backfield. They've got an okay offensive line. You know, they've got Michael Thomas. Things are working out with him in the offseason at wide receiver. And then, of course, their defense is pretty damn good. So I feel like the Saints made a huge turnaround by picking up Derek Carr in the offseason. And then last but not least, in the NFC West, I feel like the team that made the most improvements were the Seattle Seahawks. Not only did they re-sign Geno Smith, who had a breakout year for them, but then they picked Bobby Wagner back up. You know, he was gone last year. I feel like they were missing that leadership role from him. And he ended up getting released by the Los Angeles Rams. And so ended up going back to the Seahawks. And I feel like the Seahawks are the most improved team in the NFC West. So as I said, training camps have already kicked off this week. So as the days roll on, we're going to see more and more teams kicking off training camps. And that is an exciting thing for all of us football fans. But let's get to baseball, which of course has begun its second half push. On Tuesday, we had a crazy offensive night in baseball. Actually, four games, both of the teams in each game scored at least 10 runs. That's the first time that's ever happened in baseball since July 4th of 1894 and July 9th of 1894. So it hasn't happened since the 1800s when four games where both teams scored over 10 runs. So we had the New York Mets beat the Chicago White Sox in an 11-10 game. Then the Arizona Diamondbacks beat the Atlanta Braves in a crazy 16-13 game that was just a back-and-forth affair where Arizona just got the better of the Braves. Then the Kansas City Royals beat the Detroit Tigers 11-10. And then my San Francisco Giants beat the Cincinnati Reds 11-10. So it was a crazy night on Tuesday for baseball. And then on Wednesday, the Seattle Mariners got some bad news. Something that tends to happen, it feels like once a year, a stupid injury happens by a player. And this time it's Travis Kelnick of the Seattle Mariners got pissed off, ended up kicking a water cooler and fractured his foot and is now on the injured list. This happens every year where a pitcher will punch a wall and break his hand. Or in this case, Travis Kelnick was just pissed off at himself for not doing well offensively, kicked the cooler, and fractured his foot. So dumbass of the year move. It's always amusing to me when that happens just because I don't understand. I mean, I get it. I'm an anger ball as well. So I understand being frustrated and wanting to kick or punch something. But man, when you're an athlete, you really don't want to do that because you always risk the chance of breaking something. And it tends to happen every year. And this year, Travis Kelnick is the laughing stock of the baseball season. So with the second half kicking off, the first week back to baseball, you know, right now, the Baltimore Orioles have taken over the AL East lead. The Tampa Bay Rays are now on a huge downslide. I mean, they were kind of on a downslide right before the All-Star break, but they started off the All-Star break right now on a 5-game losing streak. And Baltimore is still rolling, and so they've been able to take over the AL East lead. And the New York Yankees, they continue to slide as well. You know, Aaron Judge was a huge force of offense for them, and it shows. This team is reeling, and they are now looking at the – they're at the bottom of the barrel of the American League East right now, and they are just not getting better and looking worse and worse as the season rolls on. They cannot get Aaron Judge back quick enough. Then you've got the Texas Rangers who have started off the second half fast as lightning. They are on a 6-game winning streak. Atlanta started off shaky against Arizona, but they are back on track. They had a big win last night. Right now, the Miami Marlins, they are also looking bad to start the second half off. They are on a 6-game losing streak. Then the Cincinnati Reds, also not looking good. They are 3-7 in their last 10 games. They actually got stomped by my San Francisco Giants. So that was a pretty crazy series there. And then, as I said, there's going to be a second half team that makes a run. And it's possible that that second half team is going to be the St. Louis Cardinals. And guess what? The St. Louis Cardinals have their longest winning streak of the season right now at 6 games. So, you know, with the Cincinnati Reds falling apart and the Brewers and the Cardinals getting hot, that National League Central is up for grabs yet again. And like I said, would not be shocked if the Cardinals take it over. And right now they are on fire. And then let's turn to the National League West, where the Diamondbacks have pretty much owned it. But, of course, the Dodgers are on fire. They're 8-2 in their last 10 games. But the Diamondbacks did have a nice series here against the Braves, even though they're 4-6 in their last 10 games. And then my San Francisco Giants, they've been one of the hottest teams since the second half. They're 7-3 in their last 10 games. So National League West is starting to heat up. And who knows? We may get something from the Padres, even though we have yet to see them even really get it going. And then, of course, the last bit of baseball news this week is that the Shohei Ohtani trade rumors are getting really, really hot. You know, we've got the baseball trade deadline right around the corner. And even though the Angels have said they're not going to trade him away, they might want to, because it's obvious that he's more than likely not going to re-sign with them next year. I don't know why he would. I feel like he's got to go to some legitimate contender where he could potentially win a World Series and at least make the playoffs with the Angels. That's obviously not going to happen. So there's a good chance he's not re-signing with them next year. So them trading him is actually would be a good idea for them, just because they would be able to get some type of trade value for him. But also at the same time, they're filling seats, and I could see why they wouldn't want to trade him away either. So who knows if he's going to get traded. Right now, it's looking, you know, basically every team is in the running at this point. So we'll see what happens with Shohei Ohtani in the next couple of weeks. I predict he's still going to be an Angel. Why bother? Just let him go next year. But who knows? We'll see what happens there. And so since we are in the second half of the MLB season, I decided today's Top 5 list is going to be the Top 5 second half performances, some of the greatest second half performances we've ever seen in the history of the league. So let's kick it off at number 5 on my Top 5 second half performances. Christian Yelich, the outfielder for the Milwaukee Brewers, back in 2018, had one of the most phenomenal second half seasons you will have. Hell, even his first half was not bad at all. He was batting a .292 with an .823 on base percentage. So, I mean, those are great numbers. But once the second half began, this dude went on a run in which he would end up with his second half run going his batting average would be a .367 on base percentage of .219. He ended up hitting for the cycle twice against the Cincinnati Reds, both on August 29th and September 17th. Yeah, you heard that right. He hit for the cycle against the same team on two separate occasions, becoming the fifth player in AL or NL history to achieve that feat multiple times during one season and becoming the only player ever to do it against the same team. And after the break, Yelich actually ended up having 25 home runs. Five of those came during an eight-game season-ending winning streak that would send the Brewers into the playoffs and pass the Cubs for their division crown that season. And it just was a phenomenal year for him. Like I said, he would end up winning the NL MVP that year, and it was just a historic second-half run for Christian Yelich. Then at number four in my top five second-half performances, George Brett, third baseman for the Kansas City Royals back in 1980. Actually, on June 10th, he would actually end up tearing a ligament in his left foot, which ended up causing him to miss a month of action. But he would return on July 10th for a second-half run to remember. Basically, from day one on his second half run, this guy was hot. Over the next 46 games, he batted a .470, which raised his season average to a .407 following a five-hit performance on August 26th. He would ultimately, unfortunately, fall short of averaging 400 for a batting average on that season, but his slash line, it's just amazing. It was a .421, .482, .696, which is the third best batting average after the All-Star break in AL or NL history. He would go on to win the American League MVP this year. The Kansas City Royals would go on to win the World Series. And his end of the season marks would be a batting average of .343 with an on-base percentage of 1.178. And that was during the postseason. So George Brett, he would come off of a major injury in his left foot, because if you don't know, your feet are huge when it comes to hitting home runs or just hitting at all. And he would go on to have an amazing season and help push his team to the World Series, which is what matters the most. Then at number three on my top five second half performances of all time, it would be Barry Bonds, outfielder for my San Francisco Giants back in 2002. By the way, 2002 was a heartbreaking year for the Giants, which I will get to after I kind of rattle off on what Barry Bonds did in this season. This was probably Barry Bonds, one of his greatest seasons ever. And that says a lot, because the season before was when he would break the single-season home run record back in 2001. But basically, he put up video game numbers in the second half of the season. I mean, he had a 19-89 strikeout to walk ratio, which is insane. This included 30 intentional walks, which would put him at a .608 on base percentage after the All-Star break, which is the best still to this day in AL or NL history. And no one has ever topped his 1.432 on base percentage, which he produced. That OPS right there, which he produced during only the second half of the 2002 season, was what he would match during his entire 2001 run when he broke the single season home run record. And then, of course, at the end of the season, he would take home his first batting title and his fifth National League NL MVP. And the Giants would ultimately end up in the World Series this year. But as I said, it was a heartbreaking year, because they almost had the World Series in hand. And they just gave it up to the Anaheim Angels in a just heartbreaking fashion. They just gave it up. Home run. And just would lose. And luckily, about 8 years later, they would go on a three-game winning World Series streak there, which was nice to erase this 2002 year. But it still stings even thinking about the 2002 World Series that the Giants just completely gave up in the end. But anyways, it was a great season from Barry Bonds himself, and one of the craziest second half runs of all time. Then at number two on my top five second half performances, Joe DiMaggio, outfielder for the New York Yankees in 1937, had one of the greatest second half runs of all time for one of the greatest baseball players of all time. And it's crazy, too, just because it was a big year for some other players. You know, Hank Greenberg had 110 runs for the Detroit Tigers that year. Lou Gehrig would have a 1.10 on-base percentage after the break. But it was all about Joe DiMaggio, who just outshined everybody in this this season. He would actually end up having scored the most runs with 89 and then the most total bases with 248 after the All-Star game in history still. He also ranks third in second half extra base hits with 59 and tied for third in RBIs with 99. And it just really set the tone for this New York Yankees team. But also during this second half run, he would become the only, actually the second player in AL or NL history to record a two home run cycle. So Joe DiMaggio, one of the greatest players of all time, would make one of the greatest second half runs of all time. But number one on my top five second half performances of all time is Sandy Koufax, the starting pitcher of the Los Angeles Dodgers in 1965. This guy had a second half run of second half runs. I mean, when I was looking up second half runs, I was like, holy shit. Number one is just easy. Nobody even came close to what Sandy Koufax did in 1965 for the second half run. In the second half alone, he struck out 187 batters. That is the most ever in AL or NL history. He had a .77 whip and a .460 opponent on-base percentage rank, which is among the top 10 ever. He recorded four shutouts in his final eight starts. One of those was a perfect game against the Chicago Cubs on September 9th. You know, he would also end up winning the Cy Young Award. He would also be the runner-up for the National League MVP award, even though he had a good shot at winning it. But just during this stretch in the second half, he allowed only one run across 27 innings and struck out 38. And during this time, he also battled a chronic pain in his throwing arm. But it didn't matter. He also would have a complete game victory against the Milwaukee Braves on October 2nd, which locked up the pennant for the Dodgers. And they would ultimately go on to win over the Minnesota Twins in the World Series. So Sandy Koufax had the greatest second half run of all time. So that's what we got going on for my top five list this week of the second half performances. So there you have it, y'all. We got football around the corner. But enjoy all the baseball that we got this weekend. And I will talk to you fools on Monday.